Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Winter Cowboy by R.J. Scott, narrated by Sean Crisden.
1. Daniel, 2009. There was someone standing at Isaac's new grave, and I knew immediately who it was. There was no marker yet for Isaac. He'd died 2 weeks ago and would be forever 19. Flowers marked the resting place, but snow had long since covered them and softened the raised earth, so the newness of the burial wasn't as obvious against the gravestones around the figure. I'd just left my younger brother, Chris, in the hospital, broken beyond repair in the same accident that had taken Isaac. He was still in a medically induced coma, not yet awake to know he'd lost his leg, or that fire had burned one side of his face so bad that he'd carry permanent scars. But he would wake up. They told us he'd live. Isaac had been dead on impact, Chris's future destroyed, and in front of me, hunched over Isaac's last resting place, was the man responsible for it all. My lover. The man who left my bed in the dead of night to become a murderer. Micah. He was huddled into his coat, the January ice bitter by the buried, hands forced into his pockets, and his hood pulled around his face. Micah must have heard me arrive because he glanced my way, startled, grief written on his face, and then his expression changed. He stepped toward me, his expression full of something like hope.
Daniel, he said, is Chris okay? No one will let me see him.
He stopped walking when I didn't reach out for him and looked at me uncertainly. His leg is gone, down from his knee, I explained dispassionately, and then touched my face. And his burns are bad, the left side of his face from his temple to his chin.
Shit. Shit.
Micah bent at the waist as if he couldn't breathe, and he was crying. Micah, Isaac, Chris. They'd been best friends forever, but that was finished now. How is it you don't have a mark on you? I asked, still eerily calm and utterly focused. He took his hand from his pocket and pulled up his sleeve, exposing bandages that extended from his hand to above his elbow.
I was burned, he began.
He dropped his hand when I didn't comment, forced it back into his pocket, wincing as he did so. I imagined the burn hurt a little, maybe even a lot, but he was there, as whole and real as when he'd left my bed on that terrible day. In my mind, I saw Chris in the hospital, the covers raised over the cage which protected his surgical site, then dipping lower where his ankle should have been. And here was Micah, telling me he had slight burns on his arm, the same man who told me in one breath that he loved me, and then had taken my car, driving it into a bridge and killing Isaac and leaving Chris maimed and in a coma. My fist flew, and Micah staggered back a step, but he didn't go down, and he didn't take his hands from his pockets. I was too fast. I hit him again, blood flecking his face, dissipating into the icy air. He moved again, the force of my blows shoving him back. Still, his hands remained in his pockets, and he was unnervingly quiet, taking my hits as if they were nothing at all. Another punch connected with his lip and split the skin, and this time he grunted in pain. He staggered backward toward the next grave and bent over the stone marker with the force of that final blow. I stepped closer. I hit him again, connecting with his jaw, but the hit wasn't hard. There was nothing to it. He didn't move away.
You took my car, I yelled, right in his face. You said I could borrow it, he pleaded.
I raised my hand to hit him again, but he winced and closed his eyes, and I wanted him to look at me.
Open your damn eyes!
He did, and he wouldn't avert his gaze, naked grief in his expression.
Daniel, please, listen.
You've destroyed Chris's life!
I know.
I loved you!
Please.
I don't want to see your face. I don't want Chris to ever see you again.
I understand.
His tone low and broken.
Never. Come back here.
I shook him. He was smaller than me, thinner, lighter, and I shook him so hard his head snapped back.
Promise me!
I promise, he cried. I was disgusted by him, hated him, wanted to kill him right there on Isaac's grave.
I hope they lock you up and throw away the fucking key!
I was still shouting, and he didn't move, just stared at me with those pale eyes, red and wet from crying. He wouldn't stop crying.
Don't fucking stare at me!
I shoved him one last time, and then before I could work out what the hell I was still doing there shouting at him, I pivoted and turned my back on him and Isaac's grave. 2. Micah, 2018. My sister dropped the gun, her hand shaking.
Fuck, Rachel, what did you do?
Her son, my nephew, screamed behind her, bashing his tiny fists against his head, the sound piercing in the silence after the gunshot, and I wanted him to stop screaming just so I could think. Fear and indecision paralyzed me, adrenaline making me shaky. What the hell had she done? What had we done? I stared at the gun and the blood that splattered the wall behind her husband and pooled under his lifeless body.
He was trying to kill us,
she sobbed, and fell to her knees, grabbing her son and holding him close. I had to think on my feet.
Fuck, I don't know what to do. We need to call the cops.
I pulled out my phone.
No, please, the local cops, they know what's here. They know what happens. He was my husband. Jesus.
I cataloged the chaos I'd walked into, the compound for the brothers of Chiron, the blood and the drugs and the gun. There were figures in the shadows watching us, but no one stepped forward to help. It was as if I'd walked onto a movie set and nothing was real. She scrambled to stand and tugged at my arm with a strength that belied her size, let alone the fact she was pregnant.
Please, before they kill us,
she pleaded and tried to drag me away from the shadows in the dark and the blood on the floor. I stared into her pale eyes, so like my own, and I was thrust back to a time when it was the two of us against the world. I would do anything for my sister, and by extension, my nephew, who'd stopped crying and now stared at me in absolute silence. He was looking to me to fix this, but how could I fix the fact his daddy was dead in my feet?
Fuck, Rachel.
I wanted a solution, one that made sense. But Rachel just stared at me with panic in her eyes and blood on her hands from when she'd checked his pulse.
We have to go, she said.
Gently, I eased the gun out of her hands and pushed it into my pocket. She sobbed, incapable of any more words. I should stay, talk this out with the cops. They'd understand she was protecting her son, that she was in a dire situation. There's no proof that it was self-defense. And you have a record, you fucking idiot.
I had no choice. Please, Micah, you have to believe me.
Wait, she was asking me what I thought of her.
Of course I believe you. I was here. He had a gun to the kid, but now, shit, Rachel, I don't know what to do. We need to go. No, we should call the cops.
She pointed at the shadows, the men standing in the dark staring at us, the woman next to them, the two small children.
They'll kill me.
We can't just go. She shoved me back toward the car.
Then I'll stay. You go, but please take Laurie. No, Mom, no.
Little Laurie held his mom tight and shouted the words. I heard them both. She wanted to stay and face the wrath of the rest of them, willing to have the cops arrest her. And she wanted me to take her son, my nephew, to wait around for them, happy to have them take her away. The people watching weren't stopping her going, but one of them stepped closer, a rifle in his hand. They'd kill her. I didn't have to know the place to know they weren't ever going to let her go again.
I'm not leaving without you. The baby, what will they do to your baby when it's born?
I couldn't begin to think of the horrors of leaving my sister and a newborn. I made a decision I might one day regret, but it was the only one I could make. Indecision turned to my own kind of fear. What I'd seen tonight, what I'd heard, I had no choice. I had to get my small family away from there. I couldn't stay, not if they were coming after us. I only had to check out my sister's expression. She wasn't just afraid. She was terrified. and I could hear Laurie sobbing again.
Mama!
Laurie sobbed. Get in the car, I said. Rachel scooped Laurie up and stumbled to the car at the end of the path. She scrambled awkwardly into the back and held Laurie close, and with one last look at the scene and the shadowy figures that moved closer, I followed. Rachel tried to calm Laurie.
I won't let them hurt you, I promise.
God, it sounded like the kind of thing she used to say to me. The snow was heavier now, a persistent swirl of white around us. I got back in my car. They could come after us, but first I would get my sister and her kids to a safe place, where people knew them and could watch over them. I took the gun from my pocket and held it, examined it briefly, squeezed my fingers on the barrel and the stock. Then I shoved it back again and started the car. Even though I'd promised the man I'd once loved that I would never return, even though he said he would kill me if he ever saw me again, I had to take what was left of my family home, back to Whisper Ridge.
3. Micah. Laurie had fallen asleep in the back, and Rachel was still as stone in the passenger seat. At first, she was quiet, then she cried, and then she was quiet again. I didn't know what to say to her.
What did I do?
She began to sob again. I wanted to have the answer. I think maybe she expected me to know what to say, but I was coming up empty. The rest of the journey was done in silence. 5 hours was all it took to take us from the fire to the cool safety of our childhood home. We stopped once for the bathroom, and I checked my phone for any news of what had happened. Of course, there was nothing, but it had only been an hour. Then it hit me that I could be tracked to where we were through my phone, and I considered dumping it. But what good would that do? The damage had been done, so I pocketed it and tried not to worry. I didn't have a handbook on how to run from a murder or on rescuing my sister from a cult. I bet page one would warn me not to take a phone that could provide a way to track me. We reached Collier Springs a little after 2 in the morning, the darkness absolute in the empty ranch lands between the town and Whisper Ridge, where we'd grown up. Only 20 minutes away, and already my stomach was in knots. As we drove through town, I expected ghosts to rear up and drag me from the car. Or Daniel. What would Daniel think of my coming back after I promised him I wouldn't? My 19-year-old self had deeply loved him, and I know he'd hated me when I'd left town. Would 9 years have provided enough space for things to change? I could close my eyes and see him. His dark hair, deep brown eyes, his smile, the cockiness in his walk, the way he made love to me, the kisses. As soon as we hit the road to the Lennox Ranch, my memories of a long-lost love vanished, and I was running through the reasons why I'd come here instead of running for Mexico. Maybe going south was an option, or possibly we could try to get over the border into Canada. We just needed somewhere to stop. We pulled up outside the house and killed the engine.
I don't want to go in,
Rachel murmured, and we sat in the car outside the old place. There were no lights inside, but the porch light came on. I knew what she meant about not wanting to go in. We'd both left this place for different reasons, but somehow we'd ended right back where everything had started. She reached for my hand, and I laced my fingers with hers. I felt like the big brother who used to hold his sister's hand when he was only a kid himself, trying to give comfort. Laurie stirred in the back, and Rachel glanced back at her son.
What do I do, Micah?
She was looking to me for answers. I released my fingers from her hold and got out of the car, going to the back door and lifting a sleepy Laurie, holding him close. He roused, glanced up at me sleepily, and squirmed to be let down. Rachel stroked his hair.
It's okay, Laurie. Uncle Micah is looking after us.
He relaxed, but kept his eyes firmly fixed on Rachel. The snow was deep, and she was only in cheap tennis shoes, her old coat, her legs bare under fabric that was probably a dress or skirt. She had to be freezing, and we needed to get inside. Laurie was buried deep in my coat and some blankets I had in the trunk, but he shivered as the cold hit him. Let's go. Rachel made her way through the snow by my side, awkwardly, her hands shaking, her face grim, but she was the one who knocked soundly on the door. A light went on inside the house. What the hell would Amy and Jeff think, us turning up in the middle of the night? The door was cautiously opened, a woman's face appearing in the crack.
Aunt Amy appeared older than I knew her to be, a robe wrapped around her, as she blinked onto the lamp-lit porch and let out a soft gasp. She widened the door, seemed to assess Rachel, her baby bump and the child in my arms, and ushered Rachel inside, leaving me to follow with Laurie at a distance until I stood inside the small mudroom.
"What's the fuss?"
Jeff called from somewhere in the house.
"You need to come out here,"
Amy said, and closed the door behind me. Her husband ambled into the main room, a rifle in his arm. I moved protectively between Rachel and him. He lowered it as soon as he realized who it was, but he took the time to peer out of the window, as if he was expecting trouble to be following, before locking the front door. Probably against any unforeseen problems that I could have brought with me. He and I hadn't exactly parted on good terms 9 years before, and I didn't imagine we'd be much in the way of friends now. He'd wanted me to be a man, to stay and work the ranch, but I'd made a promise to go.
"Coffee?"
Amy asked, and helped Rachel sit at the table. Jeff made coffee, all the time staring at me balefully and muttering under his breath. He wasn't as ornery way back, the way I recalled him, but he seemed to be treating our arrival as if it was some personal slight. He probably never expected to see me again. You and me both. I wasn't sure what to do with Laurie. It wasn't right to take him to one of the old bedrooms. He'd wake up and need his mom. So I laid him on the sofa and pulled a blanket over him. He looked so much like the pictures of me as a kid. All blonde hair I thought had never been cut. It was long and all around his face. From what I'd seen, he hid behind it a lot. He was thin and pale, and when I brushed his hair back, I could see bruises on his left temple. I kept my cursing internal and stood to see Amy watching my every move. "I'm not hurting him," I defended myself immediately. Amy's lips thinned, but Rachel's expression softened.
"Of course you're not. Sit yourself down, both of you,"
Amy interrupted, and then indicated the chair she'd put coffee in front of. I did as I was told. The coffee was hot, and the sandwiches she'd made thick with peanut butter. I wasn't hungry, but I ate, which was more than Rachel did. She was crying again and rocking a little. I shuffled my chair closer to her and patted her back, which was the extent of my support capabilities. The last thing I needed was for her to blurt out what had happened and have Amy or Jeff call the sheriff up here to tell them the awful story. I needed time to make Rachel see this had to stay a secret. But I could see the guilt in those tears, hand in hand with shock. I hated this room, and my sister's tears just made it worse. I remembered her crying in here, over Mom dying, over my dad raising his hands to her. I remembered the fights. Way too many memories of bad times had slid into these walls and made them close in on me whenever I'd stepped inside as a kid. They were still here, those memories, along with the stench of alcohol and the air of death that was in every part of them. I bet Rachel remembered the same things, and that couldn't have helped. "Stay quiet, Rachel. Keep it all in. Keep it to yourself. Let me deal with everything."
"Do we need to call the sheriff?"
Amy asked, gesturing at Laurie, who was turning in his sleep and snuggling down into my coat. "No," I said. Maybe I sounded defensive, I don't know, but her steely-eyed gaze narrowed on me, heavy with accusation.
"What did you do?"
I wasn't even going to give that the courtesy of a reply. It had always been about what I'd done. Nothing changed.
"There's no place for you here,"
she stated simply.
"But Rachel and the boy can take her old room."
I didn't ask what was in my old room. There was no way I was going back there. I'd die with the onrush of reminders in that small space. Maybe Amy had made it into a sewing room or something equally final. "You should sleep," I said to Rachel, but she shook her head. I didn't want to argue, but I could see hysteria in her eyes, and she was close to losing control. I helped her to stand, carried Laurie, and walked her to the old bedroom. Laurie looked up, his expression frighteningly empty. Had he gone into shock? Should I have been doing something for that? Getting a doctor, making him a drink? Who the fuck knew? I knew nothing about how to help him forget the death he'd seen tonight. Glancing into my old room as we passed, I saw it was empty. No bed, no drapes at the windows, nothing. Amy had wiped the house clean of me. I hadn't really expected anything else.
They were happy enough to take my money, but wanted nothing to do with me as a person. Speaking of which, the money I had sent them didn't seem to have gone far in fixing up the house, so I guess it had all gone in the land. I'd see better tomorrow. When I went back into the kitchen, there was no sign of Amy, but Jeff was there, unlocking the door.
You're not welcome.
He indicated the cold outside. Like I don't already know that. I shrugged, as if it meant nothing, and to be honest, right then, not a lot meant anything to me. My car was the only option. Belatedly, I realized my coat was still on the sofa, and I turned back to get it. Jeff had thrown it out the door, into the snow, along with the blankets I'd wrapped Laurie in. Well, shit. I couldn't be bothered to muster my anger, to put Jeff in his place, and I needed to get myself somewhere warm. I pushed my way back into the house and sat on the sofa in the dark. I slept, but it was just a mess of nightmares. I dreamed of flames and guilt and madness, and woke to a wicked cold in my bones. I'd experienced worse, but that didn't mean it was easy. Dawn was blue and mauve, and there had been more snow in the few hours I'd managed to sleep. Everywhere was utterly still. I made coffee, waiting for Amy or Jeff to jump out and tell me I couldn't. Then thought up a list of things I needed to do. Get Rachel to a doctor, I think. At least that was the right thing to do. I checked on her, but she was fast asleep. Laurie cuddled into her side. She was frighteningly pale, her hair matted, and she gripped Laurie tight even in her sleep. As I turned to leave, she called after me, just my name, so low I almost didn't hear it. I turned back to her and waited for her to say more, but she simply stared at me. I reached over, tugged blankets around her, and pressed a soft kiss to her forehead. I'm going out for a walk. Go back to sleep. You'll be okay here. She closed her eyes and gave a short nod. Then, fueled with coffee and stolen cookies, I walked some of the ranch. I followed the path down the incline from the house, noting the fences worn and broken in places, at the irrigation channel blocked by debris, at the fallen trees on the far side of the land, and the absence of animals. I knew that the Lennox Ranch kept minimal livestock now. Horses, they were stables. I knew all this because Aunt Amy sent reports on an annual basis to my inbox, and by return I sent every cent I could to keep the place alive. If the money wasn't fixing the house or supporting livestock or fixing the ranch, where the hell had it gone? Sending money was the only way I knew to keep the ranch ready for Rachel and any family she had. I hadn't even known if she'd had family. I guess the land would belong to little Laurie one day, along with my sister's unborn child. This was my birthright, and I was the sixth generation Lennox who could call this place theirs. Not a single part of this belonged to Rachel, some stupid throwback to male inheritance, but I had already signed everything over to her in my will. Subsidence on the path had taken a huge chunk out of the hill, and there was bound to be a mess of debris under the snow. It wasn't easy for a rancher to prevent rock slides. Growing up here, I had learned to work with Mother Nature, not against her. But the fall had destroyed some of the path and needed to be rebuilt. My ranching heart ached to see the mess. For all his drinking, Dad had had a handle on things, running the ranch with two extra hands along with me. I had loved this land once. And then Mom had died. I'd been 10 years old, and my life changed forever. I kicked out a stone and it tumbled ahead of me on the path. I stooped to pick it up, tossing it in my hand and staring out over Lennox land. My future had been tied to these acres until I'd had to leave. I threw the stone as far as I could, and it arced high in the sky, falling to earth a long distance away. My arm had always been good. Not as good as my best friend Chris's. He'd actually been scouted for pro ball, and would have gone all the way with his tenacity and skill, but for one stupid night where I'd fucked everything up. Grief consumed me, and I crouched down, struggling to breathe properly. I didn't usually allow myself to reflect on Chris, or Isaac, or the night I'd broken everything. But here, on Lennox land, all I could think about was the boys I'd known, and all the possibilities I'd destroyed. Only when I could get my thoughts back into the box I locked them in was I even able to walk again. When I got back to the ranch, everyone was awake.
"I'm going into town,"
Jeff announced, as if he couldn't bear to be in the same room as me, and Amy pursed her lips as she watched him go.
We need to get this one to a doctor,
she said, and nodded at Rachel.
No doctor,
Rachel said immediately. She looked at me for support, but I wasn't going to give that. She was ashen, exhausted, and the way she was rubbing her back, something wasn't right. If you need to, I said, and she winced.
They'll know,
she said, so softly I had to strain to hear.
Know what?
Amy leaned forward, clearly worried she was missing out on something. Nothing, I said, and I stared at Rachel with warning in my eyes. She stared back at me with a defiant tilt to her chin. God, she'd been stubborn as a kid, using the fact that she was younger than me to great effect, and she wasn't going to be told.
I'm fine. Tired is all. I'm going to get some sleep, if you'll keep an eye on Laurie.
Amy nodded.
Of course I will. I meant Micah,
she explained. Amy's eyes widened. She was shocked, but not as much as me. I worked with kids on the job, I'd just left, but they'd been at the ranch for lessons. I wasn't going to argue, though, because I believed Rachel was protecting herself. Amy's wasn't the warmest welcome we'd had, and maybe we were reverting to type, the siblings who let no one else in. There was very little warmth in that realization. We'd stayed insular for survival. That was all. I can do that, I said. We'll visit with the horses, I said, daring Amy to argue. Laurie and Rachel, heads together, seemed to come to a mutual decision, and she helped him pull on his coat and all his cold-weather extras. He looked somber and kissed his mom, and then her belly. I wish I could have heard what they were saying, but this was mom and son time. He studied me warily, but when Rachel whispered something to him, he lifted his arms to be picked up. When we left, I skirted the farmhouse, came into the yard via the tired-looking stables, and stopped for a while to visit with the horses. There were four, and they were well cared for. That much was obvious. I knew the two of them were stabled there by clients. The other two belonged to the ranch, replacements for my long-gone horse, Charlie Blue.
What you doing in here, boy?
Jeff leaned on a shovel with a suspicious look on his face. The guilty part of me wanted to scurry away and hide, but I was a Lennox, and this was my place. Then Jeff saw Laurie, and his expression softened a little.
We're here to see the horses, I said,
and Laurie slid down to hide behind my legs. There was a flicker of compassion on Jeff's face.
Don't you go messing with them,
he finished in a gruff voice and left, calling over his shoulder.
I'm going to town. You think your sister needs anything?
I shrugged. What did a pregnant woman need? I'd have liked to have said for Jeff to bring back a doctor, but after Rachel's conviction that she just needed sleep, who was I to say that wasn't okay? This was her body. Her baby. I just worried she was in shock and I would miss something vital. Should I just take over? Make decisions for her? We spent a long while with the horses, Laurie asking questions in a soft voice, but not getting too close. It wasn't that he was afraid of them, just respectful of their size. We had some lunch, and then Laurie began to yawn, so I took him and some food and coffee to Rachel and left them to nap. She looked better, her skin not quite as pale, but her eyes were so full of grief, it broke my heart. I went back out to the barn and moved bales and boxes to one side, daring Jeff to tell me I couldn't, and finally got to what I wanted, the door to the old bunkhouse. It had been part of the barn since the first Lennox decided it made sense for the hands to be as close to the animals as possible. Just off of there was a room that Dad had partitioned for me and Rachel when we were kids, a place to get us out of Mom's hair. Faded paint on the wall was all that remained of a mural Rachel had painted. Back when Dad was caring, he'd boarded the small space and added a door. No heating, but the room was good enough to sleep in and out of the snow. I went into the house, found blankets, and made up the best bed I could before stacking bales of hay around the sides for insulation. Then I sat and checked the news on my phone for the 10th time that day. Still no reported news about a murder. Is that a good or a bad thing? Part of me wanted us to be found out, for the matter to be dealt with, get arrested, make things right, cite self-defense, tell someone what kind of shit was going down in that place. The other part of me was relieved we'd made it through so far without garnering attention. If they followed Rachel, if they wanted to arrest her, I wasn't sure I could have handled that. She shouldn't have to go through anymore. I won't let her go through anymore. Tomorrow.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?